I think entrepreneur is just being a risk taker, and you have enough money and you put it all in. You start a business and you figure it out, you make mistakes, and that allowed me to open a second business, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. So we opened 7 businesses from scratch. Whoa. 3 of them didn't work out. 4 of them went on to become multi-million dollar companies.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Mondays. We are here in RV motorhome parked outside of Hubble Studio right now because we're throwing 3 events in the next 24 hours. We've got Elevator Night, the all-women's edition of Elevator Night. We have an after party with Sean Kelly and 600 people registered. Then tomorrow, we have thousands and thousands of people coming to Aspire Tour right here at the Los Angeles Convention Center. When you guys are listening to this, it has just passed, and we're probably going to Denver. I think we're going to put this out on this Monday or the following Monday, and we're going to go to Denver, Colorado. We've already sold 3,200 tickets for that one as well. And our guest, he gets events with thousands of people too. He's thrown it 7 times, going on his 8th time. It's called the Driven Event. He has the Mortgage Guys, TMG Lending, so many companies that he's building, mostly focused on the real estate category, plus his huge event called Driven. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, give a warm round of applause to Mr. Albert Preciado.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, so the way it works is we go over 3 core topics: how to make money, how to invest money, how to give away to charity. Albert's done all of those for years and years and years, and he's very open about it on his social media. You're going to really enjoy his content. Make sure to follow him. I'm sure you're going to want to if you listen to this episode, because he showcases real life. Hard stuff, good stuff, flashy stuff, fun stuff, bad stuff, and everything between, which makes you want to feel a part of his world because you really want to learn from someone that's being blunt and open about his reality of how hard it is to build a business. And he's built a really big one with a lot of employees and a lot of staff. And so it's really fun to watch the social media, and you're going to see that in his answers today. But the way it works is we keep this episode to under 40 minutes because the average commute to work is 40 minutes. The average workout is 40 minutes. And so we're going to keep this to around 35 minutes for you guys today. So without further ado, we're going to make a quick 2-minute bio so we can get straight to the money. Tell them about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm just an entrepreneur. I'm a businessman. I learned it by winging it, by just making mistakes, figuring it out, Googling it. So somebody told me, hey, you're a loan officer and you're pretty smart. You're very entrepreneur-like. Why don't you just get a broker's license, open up a company? So that's when I said, okay, cool. That sounds like a good idea. I went to Google and I Googled, how do you open a mortgage company? So it said broker's license, corporation. I didn't even know what a corporation was. And then get it approved by the Department of Real Estate. So I just Googled everything and I figured it out. And then I did everything wrong. And then I had to fix everything once I did it.
Sure.
So that was the story of how it started. But from there on, I think entrepreneur is just being a risk taker, and you have enough money and you put it all in. You start a business and you figure it out, you make mistakes, and then comes like IRS problems, state of California, Department of Real Estate, and things like that. But then from there on, I learned. But what I did that I think was very smart, that I recommend everybody to do, is hire mentors and pay to play. So for example, like, whatever you do, like, I'll invest in your events, I'll invest in your mentorships, because that's gonna show you seriousness, and then you're gonna introduce me to your relationships, mm-hmm. and then they're gonna introduce me to their relationships. So I bought my way in, I got the relationships, I learned from the mentorship, and that allowed me to open a second business, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. So we opened 7 businesses from scratch.
Whoa.
3 of them didn't work out. 4 of them went on to become multi-million dollar companies.
So let's walk through some of them. Walk us through some of the main ones, like the Mortgage Guys. What is it? What's going on there? Explain the Mortgage Guys, and maybe people want to apply to work with you.
Yeah, so the Mortgage Guys, we do residential lending for mortgages. We also offer everything else, like commercial, high balance, and different all sorts of mortgages, but we focus more on the traditional mortgages, and we help the masses. So I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm a little bit brown. I'm Mexican. So I'm Mexican-American. And a very proud Mexican, but also very proud American, because America gave me the opportunity that I have to go after my dreams. So I pride myself in helping a lot of the minority community, because that's how I grew up. And everybody told me that I was never going to be anything, that I was always going to fail. So growing with that pain, I don't know if it's because they relate to me, but a lot of my community, like, they reach out to me and they're like, hey, I want to buy a property, first-time home buyer. I don't know if I qualify. So there's this program, FHA, where it's only 3.5% down. you could buy up to 4 units, and we've helped a lot of families in the middle class, you know, buy properties. And so we serve the masses, and we're licensed in California, Florida, but we're getting access to other states in the U.S.
And what's TMG Lending? Is that the mortgage guys lending?
So it's actually driven. So we were doing TMG Lending, but now it became Driven Funding.
Got it.
Yeah. So now it's Driven Funding, and Driven Funding allows any small business owner, as you know, that maybe they're expecting money 30 days, 60 days, 90 days from now, but they don't have the cash right now. They're maybe in the red or negative, and they need to pay payroll.
Right.
They need to pay up equipment. They need marketing money to make more money in the next few months. So this is a very easy process. Takes minutes, and you get approved from $5,000 to $250K instantly, and then that's how it works for any small business owner that wants to apply.
How can someone do that? They go to drivenfunding.com?
Drivenfunding.com.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So if you have a business out there, you can apply there. If you have X amount of credit, X amount of time in business, just different factors, and they can decide what type of percentage you should get and what type, how much money you should get.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. And then, so we did the mortgage guys, got drivenfunding.com.
There's a lot more.
What else you got?
So the Ambiance Realty is our real estate brokerage. So I called it a triangle, that I was building a triangle business. But then, you know, as I learned more, it's called vertical integration. So we started the mortgage company, and then we have mortgages. So then we thought, well, real estate is in the same vertical. Why not open a real estate brokerage? That way we get mortgages and real estate commissions. And then it worked out very well. But, you know, we made mistakes, mostly with the compensation plans. Because for business, from what I learned as a business guy, is compensation plans are important, because that improves your margins, or it could put you out of business if you have unhealthy margins, unhealthy compensation plans. So all of that got corrected. But then we got stuck again. So I was thinking, well, how can I grow more? And I always remember Grant Cardone. He told me, you could speak on stage, but you got to make a million. Then I made a million, and he said, no, you got to make millions. Then I made 2 million, and he said, no, not yet, man, not yet. And I'm like, why? Like, I've been waiting. So, I mean, long story short, he told me that because I don't have an audience. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, like some of these speakers, most of these speakers, like that spoke at 10X 1 and 2, you make more money with your businesses than them, but you don't have an audience, they do. So I just got really pissed off. I remember I was like excited, but pissed off. So I was pissed off at him and excited. I got home from Florida, and I get home and I told my wife, hey, you know what? We're starting an event. And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, we're starting an event. And she's like, well, what, when? And I said, in 3 months. And then she said, where? And I said, well, the Ritz-Carlton in LA, it
sounds
seems
fancy.
Pretty nice. Yeah. It's fancy and nice. And because I was copying the Diplomat in over there in Hollywood and the 10X conference, the first one he did, the big one. So I was thinking like, well, we're going to match it. We're going to do the same. And so she said, well, 3 months? And I said, well, if he did it in 3 months, we could do it in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, what's it going to be called? And I was like, you know what? Let me take a shower. And this was when I got home from Florida, and I had some drinks on the flight. And so I had a nice buzz going on, and I was thinking, and I got home, but I was pissed off. And you know, when you're pissed off and you're having a drink, you kind of get a little bit emotional. I'm gonna take a shower, and I'll tell you when I get out. So I come out, and I was listening to some YouTube that they kept on mentioning Drive, Drive, Drive. So I tell her it's gonna be called Drive. She didn't like the name Drive. So I said, well, let's just add an N. So we called it Driven.
Wow.
Filed a corporation, an S corp for Driven Enterprises, because I also copied, you know, like Enterprises. Mm-hmm. He had a company like that called Enterprises. So I said Driven Enterprises Inc. So I just winged it again, opened that, and I said, we're gonna do our own event, Driven event, and I created my own stage to grow my audience and to create my personal brand. And that was the start of it. You always told me that since day one that I met you, you gotta work on your personal brand. So I've been doing that. But it's taken me 10 years.
Sure.
But I think people can do it a lot quicker now.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so you do your first event. Obviously, there's headaches. There's good things, bad things. And you get hundreds of people to show up. But then Driven 2, 3, 4, you start to get 1,000.
Yeah.
1,500. Mm-hmm. 2,000. I remember one of them, we had like 2,600, 2,800. Like, your events got big.
Yeah.
Like, really big.
Yeah.
Talk us through the progression of how hard it is to build an event.
I think you know better than anybody, but you just get used to the grind. Mm-hmm. Like, you get used to working 18-hour days, like, 7 times a week. Even when you're supposed to have a day where you chill or you're with family, I have this illness that you have too, because I see you all the time, where you're tied to your phone all the time.
Right.
So, like,
right now, I want to text right now.
No matter what's going on.
I'm shaking.
But I think some people say that's bad. Some people say that it's good. But you know what excites me, though? What drives me? Having money to take care of, like, my parents, my family, my people. So sometimes you do, like, an event, or you do a podcast, or you go live, or you do a pitch at an event, and maybe it doesn't go as well as you want, or maybe you get no sales. And I know how hard that is when you work so hard and you don't get results. But as an entrepreneur, you got to keep doing it consistently, because you have 3 bad days, but then the 4th, 5th day could be like your best days. So you just keep repeating, and consistency always gives you the results. So we could have stopped Driven when COVID happened, and it wasn't growing the way we wanted. We were negative or breaking even the first 3.
Of course.
But then COVID happened, and then everybody stopped their events. So I remember I told I don't know if it's the Mexican in me, but I told my people, hey, first of all, you guys are not working from home. We're going to keep the office open. And then they're like, well, what if you get sued or you get in trouble? And like, I'd rather get sued but have money than to just let everybody work from home. And no, like, we need to be in the office. We need to work harder than ever. And then they said, well, what about the event? So I said, well, let's have the event outdoors. Let's figure it out. So we kept having the Driven event. We had it outdoors. We had it in private areas where, like, on top, like in Malibu and the Hill, where it's like a private, it's not a city. It's like a private owned location. Mm-hmm. So the cops couldn't get there. So the cops got there, but they had to go leave because it's a private owned property, land. So we had it over and over again. And now we're going on Driven 8. So the consistency has led to so many doors opening up. And now when mortgage and real estate are in a really bad time, we're going through a crisis right now in real estate and mortgage. But you know who's going through that crisis? Mortgage people and real estate people that don't have a personal brand. And because of Driven and the consistency, it has helped us right now thrive when most mortgage people and real estate people, escrow people, we have an escrow company too, they're struggling because they can't get in front of people, because who wants to sell their home when they have a 2%, 3% interest rate?
Sure.
You're going to buy something more expensive at a 7%. People don't want to do that. And who wants to refinance? There's no refinances. You have a 2%, 3%. Why would you refinance to a 7? Unless you badly need cash, cash out refi. So because of the events and building the personal brand, it's allowed all of our businesses right now to do better than ever. And I think right now we are in the biggest opportunity time in decades. Like, I think right now is the best time to make money. And money excites me. Money drives me. Yeah, because everybody's focused on the chaos, the gossip, the problems, what's going on with the world. And if you just work your 18 hours a day, like you, you're on your phone closing deals, like, you're going to make more money because there is no competition.
Yeah. All right. On the investing side, we talked a bit about making money in some of your events. On the investing side, did you ever, like, get into fixing and flipping or buying and renting? Or, like, I remember you mentioned a story about getting your first house with your girl. Like, talk us through that.
Yeah, well, I think the best investment for, like, for the regular person out there, if they have a job where they make 60 grand, 70 grand a year, and they see it like, man, it's impossible to buy a house. Start with a 4-unit property, finance it 3.5% down FHA. It's an FHA loan. Government loan, you don't need the best FICO score. And now there's this program where you don't even need tax returns. You don't even need W-2s or pay stubs. All you need is a P&L, profit and loss, that you create. You provide it. So, like, you create your P&L and you provide that, and that's what the bank requires, and you could qualify for 3.5% down payment. So it's very easy to qualify for business owners. So start there.
So like a 600K place, they can just put $20,000 down?
No. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the thing is that you have to live in one of the units, but after a year you move out, you get a house, and then you rent where you live, where you used to live, sure. and now that house is paying itself. Right. Think about it. You keep it for a year, it's paid off. I mean, you keep it for 30 years, it's paid off in 30 years, and then it appreciated. So you become a millionaire
right.
just by getting a property and starting there. But on the other side, like I did that when I started. I bought a 4-unit, then I bought a 3-unit, my wife a 3-unit, and then we started getting more multi-units, and then that's where we got the money to fund and grow the businesses. So we ran out of properties because we had to sell all of them because we were running out.
There was a story when you were first about to get married and then you like wanted to buy a house first or do some type of special loan first. Can you talk us through that story?
Yeah, well my wife badly wanted to marry me. Like, she was like dying to marry me, and I never wanted to get married because I wanted to be young, and I wanted to go out there, and I always pictured like I'm gonna have 10 hot girls and I'm gonna alternate, and then I'm gonna change them for new ones, and I'm gonna have fun, and I'm always gonna be single. I don't know if this is like a guy dream.
You want to be Daniel's Aaron.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's his videographer right there.
He
traveled the world.
Like the for the Latinos, there's this guy Luis Miguel. Okay. Like, he used to date all these girls, and he was like the Dan Bilzerian, but in Mexico. Mm-hmm. But that's what I wanted to do. Like, I like money, and I like women, and I like alcohol. So that's what I wanted to do. But then, you know, I really liked this girl, and she needed to get married. So I was forced to get married. So she needed to get married because she was born in Mexico, right? So she needed to get married. And it was that time, well, I need to get married now. And I'm like, fuck, dude. I was like, it was like a nightmare. I'm like, I don't want to get married. Like, I have making good money. I have my nice car, and I go out, and I have a lot of options. Like, I don't want to get married. And so I was forced to decide, you want to marry her, or she could go marry another person, and you decide. So then I'm like, you know what? I don't want to lose this girl. Okay, fine. Let's get married. So we got married. But I told her, we're not going to get married yet, though, because she qualified for an FHA loan and I qualified for an FHA loan. So I said, before we get married, you got to buy your multifamily FHA. Because once you get married, you qualify for one FHA loan as a couple. So I said, I got my 3 units. FHA, and I told her, you got to get your own, because if not, if we get married, then you won't be able to qualify for your own. So that was the
prerequisite.
Yeah, that's what I required her to do, and so, you know, she didn't like it, but she went out there, got her multi-unit, 4 units, and then she was a happy lady. We got married, and everything was.
I got a bunch of kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So don't get married if you have a girlfriend, boyfriend, don't get married until each of you get your own multi-unit FHA property.
You hear that? No multi-unit, no ring.
Yeah, and it's and I say multi-unit because it's just not smart to buy a single family FHA in my eyes. I don't think it's smart because you're buying yourself a really expensive mortgage payment, and it's just one door. And if you live, you got to live there anyways because it's an FHA loan. It's an owner-occupied loan. But then if you move out a year later and you want to rent it out, then what happens if that renter stops paying the rent and it's a really expensive mortgage? Now you have to pay that mortgage, and it could be a $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 payment. When you have 4 units, up to 4 units, if one stops paying, you still have three other payments. So it's just smarter for you to leverage and get 4 here, 4 here. Now you have 8, then you get married.
So someone that's out there that's listening, they're like, I'm making 60 grand a year. I've saved up some money. I think I could put 20 grand down after a couple of years. I saved up the money. How do they decide, like, a duplex, 3 units, fourplex, et cetera? Like, how do they decide what fits their world? Should they go for like a 400K property or go for like 500, 600, 700,000 and really stretch themselves? You know me, I like to lean towards taking smaller risks, but what do you think when they're doing their first big unit?
I think it depends what city they're in, and to get something that's close enough, because now you could work from home. A lot of jobs, they let you work from home, mobile. So you could buy a house like in, let's say, Bakersfield or Barstow, because it's more affordable and it makes more sense money-wise. If you buy a 3-unit property in West Hollywood, it's going to be millions of dollars, and you're going to be negative. Right. It's not going to cover the mortgage. Right. But if you go into Barstow or Bakersfield, you could get a 4-unit property where the three rents pay the mortgage, right, and you live for free in the other one.
Right.
And then once you're ready to move out, now you're making money, and you could start there where it's affordable for somebody making 60, 70K. Because, you know, a $8,000, $16,000 mortgage payment, it's going to be a lot for the regular person.
Of course. Anybody. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been building your personal brand.
Yeah.
And I mentioned a bit at the beginning. When did you decide, okay, I'm going all in, like you said, like I'm going to throw Driven? Is that the same time when you're just like, I'm going to make a Driven event? Is that the same time you decided I'm going all in on a personal brand?
Yeah, because I think in the hard times are what makes people figure things out. And I always want to, my biggest aha moments have been the hard times where I know the other person's right. So for example, Grant, like I respect him, I appreciate him, but he was like my aha moment where I'm like, you know what? He's right. Yeah. So he motivated me to go and open my own event and to get known, to grow my audience. So then, because I knew it works, he's doing it, it's working. And I saw all these other people doing it, walking around with their camera guy, recording everything. So I said, I gotta do that. And me, like in the beginning, everybody was laughing at me. I had a really bad accent. Everybody would make fun of me. I would get nervous, and I was just not like, if you see me today and you see me 8 years ago,
right,
it was completely different. Sure. But you just gotta go all in and do it. And if people make fun of you, let it be, but keep doing it. Sooner than later, if you keep going on year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, people are gonna be like, damn, this guy's still doing it. He's still there. And then with wins, even if they're small wins, even if you make a little bit of money, but you're getting progress, you get more confidence and you feel good. Because when you close a big deal, you're like, you feel good. And when you work hard and you don't get the results you want, most people just quit and they stop. I see so many people, they try social media, they try to build a personal brand, or they do an event, right, or two, and then they're done. No more events, mm-hmm, no more social media, because they quit.
Yeah.
But for me, my biggest takeaway that I want to share with people is, if you don't stop, you're never going to lose. Like maybe year three is your breakout year, but you can't stop. You got to keep doing that even when you're not getting the results you want quick, because it takes time.
Okay. So while you're doing your social media, you're showcasing working out, cars, family, travel, your amazing offices and everything between. What do you do when there's haters or trolls in your comment section?
I think haters, trolls, they're free motivators. Because you know how people go and they want to go watch Tony Robbins or, you know, Les Brown. They want to get motivated. They want to get inspired. Like, you don't have to pay those people to get motivated, because the haters are free. They like, if somebody, like, there's this hater that commented, because, you know, mortgage and real estate, we're going through tough times. And I have a big office and headquarters, and I have a gym and everything. So they were thinking, and they're making fun of me. They're saying, they're thinking, oh, he lost his office. He's not paying it. He lost it. He's not there anymore. So somebody makes a comment like, ha, 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 no more videos in your fancy office, shirtless, working out. So this hater motivated me
to go make that video.
To go make that video. So thanks to this hater, you know, and then I also looked in the mirror and I'm like, you know what? I'm not in the top shape that I should be. And I got to do those shirtless videos. And then I said, and in the office. So I said, you know what? Okay, thank you. You motivated me for free. So then now I'm going to do those videos, right, and I'm going to get in better shape.
Right.
So now I've been doing those videos consistently for the past 30 days. So I'm back doing my videos shirtless, running around, and it was free motivation. So that's what, like, the haters don't understand is, if you spend more time creating than hating, then you're going to create the same life that you want, that you're watching through somebody else, living your dream life through them, because you can't create and hate at the same time. So I just, we don't have people like me and you, we don't have time to hate. No. We got to keep creating.
Seriously. Okay. So we talked a bit about making money, a bit about investing money. Now let's talk about the charity side. Why do you think it's important for people to incorporate charity either into their personal lives or into their business with their staff?
I think charity is key. You do a lot of that. I like also to give to your foundation and all that. I always do. And I think when you give, you get. So the more you give, the more you get. Even when I'm broke, because I'm broke a lot of times, Like I'll make good money and then I'll reinvest it.
Sure.
So I like to stay broke because it keeps me hungry.
Absolutely.
But even when I'm like, man, I don't have as much money right now as I want, I still give the money that I have, mm-hmm. because I know that a good deed comes back in multiples. So I always want to give. And, you know, some people will appreciate it, some people won't. But it's important to just always keep giving and having a good charity.
How do you instill it in your children? You've got multiple little kids growing up in Los Angeles, in a fancy house in Bel Air, seeing the office and cars and private jets. Like, how do you instill in them when they're growing up in a fancy lifestyle that they should also be helping or doing good?
Well, they see that we take them to work and we show them like, hey, look, this is how we run the office. This is how we treat our employees. This is how we treat our customers. And they see me and Sil, mom, doing the work and giving and helping, and then they have good morals. Like they have good they're very smart and they understand the business part. But they also like my oldest, Italia, she has school 7 times a week.
Whoa.
So when they told us she has to get vaccinated, and then all the stuff that's going on right now with the schools, mm-hmm. where they tell boys to be girls and girls to be boys, and like there's just so many things going on in the school that we don't agree with, so we decided not to have them in school, and also for safety reasons.
Sure.
But she has school 7 times a week, so the teacher comes to her and she gets taught, so she's 2 years advanced in school versus kids her age.
Sure.
And then what I do is, and mom also, we help her and we teach her, like I teach her sales, marketing, and mom teaches her operations and processes and systems, and like why this person's right here, that person's in that department. So she understands business and she's ahead in her regular school. And then we also always are very strict that you treat everybody with respect, you have good manners, and you don't interrupt people, things like that. So she's a really, really smart kid, and then she's also responsible to teach her smaller sister, the middle one, Berlin, that's 4 years old, and now we have Callie, that's 1.
Hmm.
So 3 girls. Yeah, it's like I have a pink house.
Little girl factor.
Yeah.
Okay, I asked this question to celebrities, athletes, and business people, and I've never gotten the same answer, and I'm really interested in your answer. One day, 100 years from now, when Albert passes away.
Yeah.
And these 3 little girls
yeah.
grow up and their dad is a zillionaire. Out of the $1 zillion, how much do you leave to the little girls?
You know what? I think because I've asked this question also to different people that I highly think of them. And some have said, hey, you don't leave any money to the guys, to boys, you leave money to the girls. And why? Because a man should figure it out, and because girls, you know, they should be taken care of. Now, for me, I've never really thought about if I had a boy, because I only have girls. So it's if you have boys and girls, right? The question?
No, just your kids in general.
Oh, your kids in general. Yeah. Yeah. So what I would do is I would give a percentage, you know, I would spread it out,
mm-hmm.
but I would have the smartest one control all of it.
Interesting.
So
told you I never get the same answer.
So like like let's say Callie gets a third, Berlin gets a third, and Italia gets a third, but maybe Italia is the one that controls it.
Mm.
And she decides who can get what out and investments or stuff like that. Because I mean the reality is that if you have a lot of kids, you're gonna have bad kids and smart kids, dumb kids, druggy kids, alcoholic kids, you know what I'm saying. So if you just leave equal parts to everybody, what's gonna happen if your druggy kid
gets
a bunch of money, right? They're gonna go out there and kill themselves. So that's why I think it's very important to have a CEO for your kids that's in charge of the money that's left.
Very cool. Well, definitely never got the same answer before. All right, as you guys are hearing this, I'm going to have Albert back on this podcast multiple times. We've been friends for many years. Make sure to check him out on social media. It's at Albert Preciado across all platforms, especially Instagram. He goes live there very often. He does a lot of great content teaching people about what he's doing, and he's doing it on a consistent daily basis, which you guys should look at and emulate the things that you like for yourself. Now, as you guys know, we don't do ads here. the Money Mondays is important to me because I want you guys to have these discussions. When we grew up, it was rude to talk about money in the household. People didn't do it. It was rude to talk about it at school. You didn't learn about it. And so I want you guys to go out there and share content like this. You're going to see a lot of clips. Obviously, there's been a lot of fun clips of this today's episode. But in general, share the podcast. Like it, comment, subscribe. Check out Albert's podcast as well. It's really important to have these discussions in our society. And we appreciate you guys. We'll see you guys on the Money Mondays next Monday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Mondays, where we talk about three core topics: how to make money, how to invest money, and how to give it away to charity. Our guest today has done all of the above, and we're going to talk about some very interesting topics because he throws live events. He's one of the most famous hypnotists on the planet. He'll teach you about your mindset, coaching, how to make more money, there's just so many things we're going to go over today. But keep in mind, we keep all of our podcasts under 40 minutes because the average workout is 45 minutes. The average commute to work is 45 minutes. So we want to give you guys around that 37 to 40 minute mark so that you know ahead of time that you can consume all this content today, especially for this one. You're probably going to want to rewatch it because there's going to be some really good content, really good clips, because our guest, he fills up events for 4 days, 12 hours a day, and he's the only speaker. Just put that in perspective. So we're going to have to try to fit a lot of content into the next 35 minutes. Please give a warm round of applause to Mr. Marcel Klein.
Thanks for having me, Dan. I'm pretty excited.
If you could, give us the quick 2-minute bio so we can get straight to the money.
Yeah, so I'm 25. I've been doing this since I was 15. I started coaching kind of when I was younger for fun, my friends. And then I saw my friend get hypnotized when I was 18. And in a matter of 10 minutes, he went from having no confidence at all to being extremely confident. And that piqued my curiosity. So I started studying hypnosis. And obviously, as I started to grow my business and I wanted to make more money, I started to apply these different strategies and tactics to others and noticed that not only were they making more money, but they'd have a drastic shift in their life. And I started to ask myself, what's the biggest variable that can make a shift? You know, you can't change the economy, you can't change your circumstances, but the one thing that you can change is your mindset and your habits and your actions, the way you think. So when I started focusing on the mind, I found that I opened a Pandora's box that led me on a path to become very successful very quickly. I think a lot of people in this industry say they're successful and they're not. And they say that they're, you know, they know what they're doing and they don't get results. Like, I have people come to my seminar, I have people come to me one-on-one, and I turn their life around in a matter of minutes, whereas they might've gone to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a psychologist for a decade. You know, they're on medication and they still haven't gotten the results. Yeah. So, you know, my goal today would be to really show people that they can make a massive change in a very short amount of time, hopefully by the end of this podcast, and have a drastic impact on your income and your personal life.
So on the making money side, why is mindset important? Why is it so important to people? Why can't they just like study, go to college, and then go get a job and make some money? Why do you think mindset's important?
Well, I think most people think too small, right? We're literally brainwashed to think that getting a job, maybe making like $200,000 a year, is on the very high end of the spectrum, and that's going to give you the life you want. But the truth is, if you're making $200K a year, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer. You know, my sister's an attorney. I mean, she went to law school, Pepperdine. She had a full ride scholarship to UCLA and Pepperdine, my twin sister, and she's asking me for money every day. You know, she's asking for me like to pay for her rent and her car payments. And I look at this and I say, well, most people think that if you go the long route and you get a formal education, you're going to do it for wealth. The truth is, you're doing it to secure yourself a job, but a job is never going to make you wealthy. The thing that's going to make you wealthy is thinking big. And I think a lot of people refuse to go the informal route, the entrepreneurship route, because they don't have the confidence, they're scared, they think they're going to fail. And because of that, they take a step back, or they're too slow. They may know what they should do, but they don't, or they give up really quickly because they're like, oh my God, this is scary. And I think those who are very successful, probably including yourself, have gone through so many ups and downs, so many moments where things would seemingly be uncomfortable. But you know, for me or for you or other entrepreneurs, people who think really big, they're just so focused on the goal, on the vision, that they cannot stop. As most people kind of focus on the fact that it's just never going to happen. They don't believe in themselves, and therefore they never make more money. So I think shifting your mindset gives you that leverage to actually take the action you should take to make more money.
So someone's out there making 60 grand, 80 grand, 100 grand, such a hit, $120,000 a year, but they're scared to become an entrepreneur. And entrepreneurship is scary. What do you think it is that holds people back from the mindset from making that leap into the entrepreneurship world?
I think the biggest thing is what they've been taught. And the biggest confusion you might have is that it's a lot easier to be an employee than it is to be an entrepreneur. Now, it depends what you think is easier. It's easier to be an employee if you are good with instructions and you just want someone to do the thinking for you. So if you want someone to say, hey, you know what, just do this, this, and this, all of a sudden now, you know, it's easy. But if you're an entrepreneur, you actually have more free time. Like, you really do have more time because you're better at leveraging your time. You're more productive if you're a good entrepreneur. And the thing I would tell people is that you have to pick what you, it depends on what you value. If you value money over time, then being an employee is amazing because you're going to sell all your time for a little bit of money and you're going to feel comfortable. If you value time way more than money, well, you're going to make sure that you make the most out of every moment you have. And that's really why people become entrepreneurs. I find they're entrepreneurs because they want more freedom. They want to make a bigger impact. They have a bigger purpose. It's not just because they don't want someone to tell them what to do. That's not enough motivation, because there's going to be a lot of moments where you're going to ask people for advice. I mean, as an entrepreneur, I want someone to tell me what to do. Someone who's more successful than me, I want to listen to them, but I act on it immediately. Whereas if you're just an employee, you're making 60 to 80K a year, you want to make 120, I think there's going to be a dip in income, especially if you quit your job, you start something new. Like, there's a learning curve. You're not going to just make the money. But as soon as you commit to it and you say, hey, no matter what, I'm going to make this happen, overnight you're going to make, you know, that decision alone will ultimately make you way more money in the long term. And I think most entrepreneurs fail. I think there was a statistic. It's like 85 or 90% of businesses fail because they don't have enough leads. Like, that's the marketing. Marketing is the number one reason businesses fail. And I remember at the start having this issue. And most of my friends that started with me gave up. They all have jobs now.
Right.
And I think that there were moments I had no leads at all, but I would go to the mall. I'd walk up to people. I just wanted it so bad that I didn't give up. And I think a lot of people just have to realize that if you commit, you have to go all in. It's not entrepreneurship or business in general. It's not a half in, half out. It's an all in thing. You got to make fast decisions. You got to really value your time. And I think those are the traits that I see, you know, in common with those who are successful.
So you showed me videos of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people coming to your events, again, for 4 days at a time, these long sessions.
Yeah.
Why is it important for someone to either go to business events, get a mentor, get a coach? Why is it important to learn these things from someone that's an expert in the space?
The best way to put it is that, you know, people think it takes years to learn something or years to get the knowledge to get the result. The truth is, you can get the knowledge in an hour. You can get the knowledge in a day. It's just implementing the knowledge that takes people a lot of time. So if you had all the knowledge, like if I started from scratch or you started from scratch, I'd probably be back here within a year. And a year is that's me exaggerating. At least my revenue numbers would be exactly the same within 30 to 60 days. I actually think within 30 to 60 days, I'd be making exactly the same amount of money if I started from scratch. Because I have all the strategies, the mindset, the model. I understand the systems. Like, I've built it. I have the experience. I think you can't get experience in an hour. You're not going to get the experience. But if you have the right network, you know, like right now, you're introducing me to someone that's going to help me literally go to that next level. You're literally making an intro for me later today, someone that's going to help me go to that next level. And I think a lot of people undervalue the networking at these events. You know, the common misconception is you go to these events and everyone's a loser or something. The truth is, everyone at this event is an entrepreneur. They're all millionaires. They're all extremely successful. These are the top 1% all huddle up in a room and all want to learn. I find that people who are actually not successful and those who are usually less, you know, monetarily, like people just have less money, might be more skeptical. They're like, oh no, I don't want to hear that. That sounds like a scam or like this guy. Why? What does he know? I went to UCLA or an Ivy League. Fantastic. But, you know, I oftentimes see people go to Ivy Leagues or, you know, UCLA, Pepperdine, like the best schools you could think of. And they really don't make that much money because it's not designed to make you money. They're not sitting there teaching you how to make money. They're teaching you how to be a really good student of whatever it is you're practicing, whether it's law, medicine. Entrepreneurship is a game of wisdom, and I think it's a game of people. And you have to be really good with people, and you have to be really innovative, and you have to solve problems really well and get used to feeling stress. If you are not used to managing your own emotions, then there's no place for you as an entrepreneur. And if you go to these events, people who have done these things before will show you, especially, you know, you come to my event, I show people how to control all their feelings, all their emotions. I show them how to influence others. You walk into a room with investors, suddenly they're throwing money at you. Why do they want to invest with someone who's necessarily charismatic and maybe you don't have that? Well, how do you work on that? Everything's a muscle. And I think a lot of people work on the skills that don't make them money. Like, for example, they work on their logo or they work on their website. That's not going to necessarily move the needle. What can you do right now that will change the game for you? And I think people don't ask themselves that question. They think it takes a lot longer than it does.
So I'm going to give you guys a real life example. Imagine I want to start a clothing brand and Marcel wants to start a clothing brand, but I hired Damon John to be my consultant. Who do you think is going to get to $1 million faster? When you go through the process, Damon John's going to know what manufacturer to use, what warehouse to use, who should handle the shipping, who should do the merchant accounts, who should be the sales reps. He's going to know what happens at the retail stores, what type of merchandising displays, what type of marketing should happen, what the e-commerce should look like, so what platform should we use, what do we do with returns. Marcel's going to be figuring it out because it's his first time trying to build a clothing line. Even though he's successful in other categories, I've got someone that's done $1 billion that's guiding me through the forest. Does that make sense? And so if you have something where you can learn, which you can, from books, from YouTube, from courses, from mentors, from coaches, from business events, you have so much access to information, like Damon John in the clothing brand example. If you want to start something, whatever category you're in, go hire a coach, go buy their books, go listen to YouTube, consume all the information before you even get started, because it'll put you way ahead of the person across the table from you that's trying to do the exact same thing. All right, so we talked a bit about the making money side. Let's go on the investing side. Why should people invest money, time, and energy into themselves, into their mindset?
I think it increases, if you work on yourself, it increases your capacity to make more money in the short term and in the long term. So if you're right now in a place where you can only make 100K a year, for example, to make the numbers simple, and you were able to do something or learn something that would make you a million a year, well, you just 10x'd your income, not just today, but your ability to compound that. So if I were to invest $1 million versus $100,000 year after year, you know, that right there compounds. The second thing that I think is important is that, again, we only have so much time. And when you don't change your mindset fast enough, people take a long time to change. They take a long time to make decisions. If you don't change fast enough, you're not going to get to where you want to go soon. I mean, you're going to run out of time. So we all have a certain limit to what our potential looks like. And that limit depends on how soon you start and when you die. So if you start in a year, then your potential obviously decreases. And it also exponentially grows. So, you know, year one, you might make a million. Year two, you might make three. Year four, 5, 6, you're at 10, 20, 30, you might have a couple dips, but the trend will be upwards and it'll compound. I think other people maybe underestimate how quickly you can grow and how exponential it is. So every year you waste could be tens of millions of dollars that you're actually losing because you didn't make the decision sooner.
So when I pitch masterminds or coaching, and also when I hear a friend pitch it, there's one main thing. Imagine someone says, I charge $100,000, you charge $100,000, sometimes you charge $1 million. So if I charge $100,000, but your business does 12 million sales, do you think I can help your business by 1%?
I hope so, yeah.
Right? Do you think I can help you make or save 1%? Well, if the answer is yes, because you do 12 million, then I can help you make or save 120 grand. What if it was 2% or 3%? But more importantly, if you pay me that once and you learn that information or get that relationship or get that access or learn how to save on taxes or make more sales, that doesn't go away. Next year you do 18 million. Then you do 26, then you do 40 and 70, mm-hmm. et cetera. And you still have that information that you got from me, the connections, the access, et cetera. And so that's why I'm obsessed with coaching, why I'm obsessed with mentors, et cetera, and books, YouTube, and everything we talked about. Because if I'm on a trajectory to do 2 million, 5 million, 10 million, 100 million, whatever the number is, and a little bit change, 1%, 2% change, it literally compounds over the course of time.
Yep.
It's a drastic number. If I'm 1 or 2% better because he taught me something, and then that happens again next year when I have a bigger business, and then again next year, and again 8 years from now, from the one thing you told me sitting in an RV in 2024, how much would I pay for that? Like, when you really think about it. When sometimes people hear, like, I can't believe you charge 100 grand, or you charge 10 grand for this, or 50 grand for that. The math compounds over the course of time. And the things that you learn, nobody takes that away from you.
You know, another way to look at it is, hey, you know, you might say a good investment is, you know, put 100K, let's just say best. You got lucky. You found the best piece of real estate. You found $1 million lot for $100,000 and you bought it. And you could flip it tomorrow for $1 million, right? And now you have $900,000 in profit. As good of an investment as that is, it's not common and it's not going to happen more than once, maybe every decade, let's just say. But if you spend $100,000 into a skill that will make you exponentially more money, well, now there's no limit. So an example of a skill like that would be the skill to influence others at a really high level, like communication. If you can walk into a room and you can get others to want to do business with you, you can get a team, people who work for you to really want to work for you, but at a super high level. You could train a sales team to convert better. You can train your marketing team on how to perform at their best. Or you could just walk in a room with investors and just get investors to throw money in your face. You know, everyone wants to partner up with you. Everyone wants to invest with you. Well, of course, that's going to be exponentially more valuable. And the skill you learned there was communication, influence. Maybe you worked on your confidence and your mindset. I think a lot of the time, if you want to go to the next level, there are certain skills that will take you there. And the number one skill is going to be, I really think, self-belief. I think if you can work on your self-belief, because You know, if I give you a lottery ticket and you knew it was a losing ticket, Dan, would you go cash it in? No. But if you knew it was the winning ticket, you would do anything to cash it in.
I would leave right now.
You would leave right now. You do anything. So everyone has a winning lottery ticket. It's just the question is, are they willing to do what it takes to cash it in? An entrepreneur believes they have the winning lottery ticket. They have an idea. And even if the idea fails, they're not attached to the idea. They're attached to the outcome. The outcome is, hey, I'm going to be successful. I'm going to make this money. I'm going to have millions and millions of dollars in my bank account. And I think some entrepreneurs don't have the best ideas. Like, you'll notice those that pick smaller items. Like, if you want to sell a low ticket item, because remember, a lot of people think small. So they might want to sell a $10 product or a $20 or $30 product or a $100 product and think that they're going to scale up millions of dollars. It's a lot harder, from my experience, to sell something 1,000 times that maybe is $49 and make $49,000 that way. Or sell one thing for $50,000. If you sell one thing for $50,000, I think it's a lot easier to do because you have way less leads. It's way more focused, takes way less time, way less effort, and you made the same amount of money. So remember, the same actions you take, I call it effective action. If you take more effective action, action that produces a bigger result, like if I sell 10 $50,000 items for the same amount of time it would take me to sell 1,000 $49 items, well, I've now made $500,000 versus $49,000. And I think people think too small, so they can't even see that path. They're like, well, who's going to pay for that? There's plenty of people that would pay for that. I mean, I spend hundreds of thousands of dollars every month, not just on my mindset, but on luxuries, on houses, on cars, on fun, on travel. You know, so I think people underestimate how most people think. A lot of the time, the more money you make, the more you realize there's a lot more money in the world. I think people don't know because you're around maybe an environment where people don't have a lot of money. That's why an event would be awesome. Because when you go to these events and guys are like, oh, I make $3 million a month. It changes your paradigm. It shatters your reality. When you're like, I haven't made $3 million in 10 years and this person just made it in the last 30 days, what are they doing? You know, you have the opportunity to ask them, like, what did you do? How long did it take you to get here? One of my one-on-one clients, his first month ever in business, he had like ads running on TikTok. He got $100,000 credit from them. So he had no money up front. He got a sales team, hired a sales team, commission-based entirely, made $1 million the first month. By month 5, he was at $5.5 million a month. It just off e-commerce, like selling, I think, Amazon stores or something like that. It was like $30,000, $50,000, $200,000 packages. And I'm like, well, he scaled that in 6 months to $5.5 million a month. And people are sitting here thinking, hey, how do I make $100,000 this year? I think you're thinking too small. You got to think bigger if you really want to be successful.
When you surround yourself with greatness, you're forced to become a greater version of yourself. If you go into a room and someone's making $3 million and someone's making $1 million, someone's making X and Y and Z, it forces you to just not just think different, but like change your whole path. Like you want to go down the rabbit hole to realize like, how does that person doing that? Are they better than me? Are they smarter than me? Do they have more access to me? Do they grow up with a silver spoon? Like it really blows your mind when you sit in the room sometimes, like, because you've met billionaires, you've met zillionaires, and sometimes you're not that impressed. Like
I'm not impressed at all.
Yeah.
I actually coached the company from $30 million to $1 billion. I went into the company, and this is the first time I've ever been in a $30 million company. Like I didn't even know that existed. Like company, it was 2020. It was like towards the beginning of my career, even though it's not that far away. But you know, it was more like the first 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And in 10 months, I helped them go from $30 million valuation to over $1 billion. And I negotiated 0.5% at the beginning. And when I went in there, it was operating really inefficiently. I mean, the CEO wasn't controlling, you know, the employees. There was drama all day long. People were unproductive. They were like taking breaks. It weren't working. The communication was just messed up. And you just fix small things and suddenly they're running extremely efficient and they've changed. And I think all businesses fail if the leadership is not in the right place, like if their mindset's not in the right place. So in this case, he was still thinking like a startup. He's been doing this for 10 years. It took him 10 years to get to a $30 million valuation. And when I met him, he was still living in a small apartment. He didn't want to buy a car. He's had the same beater car from the beginning. And I'm like, no, you're going to, the first week coaching him, I'm like, you're going to go get the nicest apartment you can find, like a penthouse, whatever you want to live in, you're going to go get it. Doesn't matter what the rent costs. Get your dream car. He bought a Porsche GT3. And he went and he made all these changes psychologically and he put himself in abundance. And now he started thinking in a completely different way. Remember, if you think small, I think it trickles down. I keep saying think smaller, think big. It just simply, if you see a bigger goal, you're going to achieve a bigger goal. I think imagine, you know, you want to start a $10 million a year business. Well, if you fail and you only made $1 million this year, you still did better than if you failed at $1 million a year business and only made 100,000. You know, I'd rather fail on the way to 10 million than fail, you know, come short of 10 million or 50 million or 60 million than come short of like a $500,000 goal. You know, go ahead.
So someone at home is sitting there and they're hearing you say all these numbers and they're like, man, like I'm just getting out of college, or I just started making my first 60, 70 grand a year. What are the things that they can do, or what can they read or search or hear about or listen to? Like, what are the first things to just like expand their mind?
Yeah. So that's a great question. I think the first thing you have to do, and this is going to take a second to unwind what I'm saying, but you have to de-pedestalize money. A lot of the time we put money on a pedestal. We think, hey, you know, $100, wow, it's a lot of money, or $1,000, wow, it's a lot of money. When you devalue money, it's easier to make the money. So at the beginning of your career, let's say you're starting off, you're coming out of college, the idea of maybe having like a Ferrari or a nice house or making $1 million, or you're thinking to yourself, if I was making $20,000 a month, I would be rich. Like, these are the thoughts going through your head. Well, suddenly you make that money and it doesn't seem so big anymore. Because if you want to have the mansion, you want to have the cars, you want to eat out at dinners, you want to travel, before you know it, you're spending $100,000, $150,000 a month, and now you feel a bit restricted. Now you have employees, now you have a team, now you have payroll, you got rent, you got to pay for your office, you got to pay all these expenses that you didn't think about, and now you're spending $200,000 or $250,000 a month just to afford your business. So for you to even get to that point, you have to take money off the pedestal. And if you're just starting off, my advice to you would be, get used to spending money out of your comfort zone. Sometimes they're like, oh, save your money. You're going to save, even if you save $1,000 a month for 3 years, you don't have any money. $36,000 is nothing. Like, it really is, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. You're not going to do anything with it. The best thing you could do when you're making less than $10,000 a month is to save it up and come to events and learn skills, network with people that will help you make more money. Up until you're making $25,000, $30,000 a month, even the idea, like the thought of saving, shouldn't even cross your mind. I think people confuse, hey, I should save money. You should save money when you're making a lot of money. When you could save $200,000 a month, $100,000 a month, $50,000 a month at the minimum, then you could save money. Because then you could take that money and you can compound it somewhere else. But if you're not making enough, then the idea of saving, they're like, save for a rainy day. Why does there have to be a rainy day? Why do you have to go into the mindset of, oh, things are going to get bad? They're not going to get bad if you're innovative, if you can see forward, if you make less than $10,000 a month, it's already bad. It's not going to get much worse, you know?
So the other core topic we'd like to talk about is charity side.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it's important for people, either for their household or for their business, to involve something to do with charity?
You know, so on a practical sense, let's just say someone listening to this has no empathy, then it's a great tax benefit. But on a psychological sense, I think if you go to a buffet, and let's say you at best can eat 3 plates worth of food. Well, you're going to stop at 3 plates. But if you had to take food back to your family and you had 10 people at home waiting for you, you're going to take back 30 plates. You're going to do everything you can. I think when you start making enough money, you make $3 or $4 million a year. At that point, you already have everything you want. Like, you can, if that's your profit, you can afford the house, the cars, the travel. You don't really need more. When you start making an impact on someone, or you have a charity, or a purpose greater than yourself, you're going to be far more motivated. And I think if you have the mindset that, hey, I'm going to give 10 or 20% of what I make at the end of the year to a certain cause every single year, you're going to be really motivated, because you get comfortable. People get comfortable. They're like, hey, I make this much, I don't want to work anymore. When you're donating, it gives you drive. It says, hey, like, this isn't for me, this is for them. When you're looking at the cause, you're looking at, say, let's say kids, there's a problem. Like, I donate to kids in Africa. Like, I donate food and money to orphanages all the time. When I look at these kids and they don't have an education, they don't have food, they don't have clean water, you know, they need wells made, I am motivated to go make more money to send them. Because your money, let's say in Africa, goes 10 times further, sure, than it does here. So if I send them $10,000, that'll go way, sure, further than what here. So my motivation is, if I could send them like $500,000, not at once, because I don't think that people can manage it, but if I could send them $500,000 every couple years, how much of an impact would it make on these kids' education? They don't have to worry about water. They could sit there, they can, you know, learn, they could study, they have new textbooks, maybe they have uniform, dress code, they just feel like they're better, they have a different mindset. You know, I can kind of influence the curriculum slightly. I can give them some resources myself. These are all things that motivate me to make more money. Also, taking care of my friends. You know, even if it's not to a charity, what if you could take care of your parents? What if you could take care of your really good friends? Hey, you know what? My friend's struggling this month. Let me help them out. Let me buy them a ticket to a seminar. Like, simple things like that would make a change in someone else's life, I think, will motivate you. And oftentimes, people don't think about it that way. It's always selfish. It's like, why would I donate my money to a charity? Well, because you're thinking selfishly, you're never going to make that much money. Anyone who's thinking about themselves, if it's about me, not about we, you're not going to go far. You know, to be successful, I think you have to be less selfish. You have to think about others, be altruistic. And that would be my biggest reason to donate to a charity. But also, you know, it's not everyone has the ability to do that. And if you have been given the privilege and the talent and the skill and the brain, and, you know, it requires some luck to be an entrepreneur, and you've received that luck to be successful enough, I think you should give back. You know, it's part of the game.
Last question. We're in an election year, and there's a lot of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And people are bombarded in their minds by media and, you know, very divisive noise.
Yeah.
How can people stay calm in the chaos?
I think if you focus on what you can't control, you're going to always feel stressed out. And is the economy in a good place? Not really. Are we heading in a good place? Well, we could be heading in a horrible place. Really, we don't know what the result of the election is going to be. But what I can tell you to focus on, instead of focusing on, hey, even if the economy were to crash tomorrow, you still have your skills. Like, if you have a certain mindset, you have a certain amount of confidence. There's a wonderful quote I love. It says, if all of the money in the world were to be taken out of your bank accounts and distributed equally amongst everyone, it would soon end up in the same hands. In other words, those who have money, even if they were to lose it all tomorrow, they'll get the money again. So when the economy goes down, like in 2020, we had a mini recession. Well, the wealthiest people in the world got way richer, and there were two options, like especially in my business. I had an option to either go out of business. All my close friends that were other hypnotists and coaches all went out of business, and I 10x my business in 2020. I went from making, I think, 25K in February was my best month ever, to 230,000 in September. So I scaled massively because you have two options. And I think people don't realize when the economy starts to collapse or things aren't doing that well, that's really an opportunity to make more. Things are much cheaper, so you have a lot more opportunity. And two, although other people all believe there's no money, rich people still have money. So if you're solving a rich person's problem rather than a poor person's problem, you're never going to run out of money. Like, if you go to Honda right now, you could buy a car under MSRP. You go to Toyota, you buy a car under MSRP. Every time I buy a new car, like I bought an Audi R8 the other day, I bought, you know, a GT3, a Ferrari, all these cars are still 100,000 over MSRP, 60,000 over MSRP, because the people buying them always have money. Rich people have money all the time. So if you go into a luxury market and you start a business that targets rich people, you're never going to have a problem with the economy going down.
All right, guys, I'm going to obviously have to bring him back because I can talk to him for hours about these different types of topics. Yeah. What's important for you guys to do is have these discussions with your friends, family, followers. Like I always say, you know, we don't run ads here. It's been over a year now. And I really want you guys to consume all the content, talk to your friends and followers about it, because we all grew up thinking it's rude to talk about money. And I think it's rude to not talk about it. You have to talk about loans and taxes and IRS and what happens when your friend borrows money from you. And what happens if you break up with this person? What happens if you got to pay for rent? Should I lease? Should I buy? Should I get a mortgage? What should I do? We don't talk about it because we thought it was rude. And we have to have these discussions. So you guys can go to themoneymondays.com. Watch us there. You can obviously share this with your friends. Like, comment, subscribe, everything. Check them out on social media. And we'll see you guys next Monday.